Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. I'm your host, Cody, and today we're wrapping up the month of September with the final comic book adaptation soon-to-be-made TV show, or something like that. I never remember what I call these things. I don't think I mentioned what... I think I mentioned it maybe last week what I'm going to be talking about, but today we're going to talk about Why the Last Man, and if you've listened to this podcast before... way back last year, I believe, I actually talked about this along with another Brian K. Vaughan book, Ex Machina. So far, Ex Machina hasn't really, hasn't been made into a TV show or being made into a TV show. But the other projects by, Brian K. Vaughan have been made into TV shows. Amongst he's also worked on other TV shows, but Runaways is a book he created with Marvel that is basically set to or is on its second season, I want to say. He co-produced that as well, and then obviously he the characters and story he wrote, so they're going off of his books for that. He is credited as not the creator of Daredevil, but a lot of the character, one of the characters from the Daredevil TV show, Father Lantum, is one of his creations when he was on the Daredevil run they're utilizing. So all from season one. Any television shows he's actually worked on, he worked on Lost as well as he worked on Under the Dome. He was a showrunner, an executive producer, and a writer for two seasons on Under the Dome, and he wrote a handful of episodes of Lost and contributed with to write with other people on a bunch of them, including a big fan of ours here, not just my show, but the main podcast too, Drew Goddard. He actually worked with him on an episode before, or a couple of episodes before too, so pretty fun little thing there. Brian K. Vaughan has written so many books. His longest run, it's actually currently running right now, which is Saga. It's not his longest run so far. His longest run was Why the Last Man, which has made it to 60 issues. A pretty good run so far. They're at 54 issues of Saga, I believe. That's a good little run right there. But anyways, he's done, mentioned for Marvel, he's worked on, he helped rekindle and make essentially the Runaways. He's worked with Captain America, Wolverine. He's worked with the Ultimate X-Men, which is a really good, he had a bunch of good ones there. He's worked with, DC's done Superman, Green Lantern, a bunch of Green Lantern stuff. He worked on Batman stuff, the Titans, Young Justice, and over at Vertigo, his self-created books, Ex Machina. He had an amazing run on Swamp Thing, Why the Last Man's from Vertigo as well. Pride of Baghdad, which is a pretty interesting book too. He wrote that over there. And for Image, he had Saga. He added a story to, or he had a miniseries called We Stand on Guard, which is a pretty fun book. He has a really, really good book right now also running called Paper Girls, which is fucking fantastic. And then, of course, he has his own imprint and publication called The Panel Syndicate, where he's written three different titles for. One is Private Eye, which I'll talk about when we come to a Brian K. Vaughan month. Barrier, which is another really good one, and a standalone single shot in canon book called The Walking Dead, The Alien, which I'll talk about then and not right now. So he's done a lot of things. He's amazing. One of the best. He's one of my favorite writers for comic books. Both Ex Machina and Why Last Man, reason I talked about him on the podcast before, is they're both spectacular stories and amazingly written. Pia Guerrera, who does the art for Why Last Man, has worked on several things. She's not nearly as active as Brian is, especially currently. She's done a few things the last few years. She did a lot of pencils for... she did a bunch of Spider-Man stuff. She did some... blah, blah, blah. I think she did some... It was a Black Canary, some Arrow stuff for DC. And, of course, won a bunch of awards for Why the Last Man, Eisner Awards, because, well, they're amazing. And her art's amazing, too. And then along with that, J.G. Jones, who's an amazing artist in his own right, has done tons of covers. He did interiors on some stuff, but he's definitely well-known for his covers. I don't want to say only for his covers, but if you ever look at his body of work, he definitely has a massive amount of covers he's done for books, and they're amazing. He's done a bunch of interiors. One of my favorite books that he did was with Grant Morrison. He did was Final Crisis. He did the miniseries Wanted with Mark Miller, which I'll talk about another time on there too. He's worked with Grant Morrison several times. He's done. He's worked with Brian Azzarello, who I'll talk about a little bit later. He worked on. He's done. I mean, so much stuff. He's amazing. His art is fantastic too. And then I think that's it for the talent from the books. I think so, yeah. I don't need to go into Vertigo. That's a whole different story. So, for the people who don't know, I'm going to briefly break down the story of Why the Last Man for y'all. And I won't go into too much detail because, I mean, I don't want to spoil too much of it for you. But basically... it's a post-apocalyptic science fiction comic book written by Brian K. Vaughan and Pia Guerrero, who did the artwork inside. And then it was produced from Vertigo Comics between 2002 and 2008. You can collect them all in different ways, individual issues, which are really hard to find for all of them. You have trade paperbacks, which there should be a total of 10 of them. Yes, 10 of them. Well, I did do math. 60 divided by roughly five to six issues each. You have the now no longer available hardcovers. You had the deluxe editions, which were five of them. Then they re-released them again in a deluxe edition, but those same ones, but in trade format. So they're the paperback versus the hardback, which I believe you can still get. You might still be able to order the hardcovers, but I'm not too sure. Those, again, are five. Or if you want the super awesome, gorgeous editions, you get the absolute Why the Last Man Volume 1, 2, and 3. Those are a little more expensive, but they do cover, obviously, there's three of them versus the five or ten, and they run more. They're much larger size, and they're gorgeous reprints of everything. But I highly recommend you read them however you get a hold of them. So the story is this. There is this virus that, or plague, I should say, really, because it's less of a virus and more of a plague. Plagues are run rampant and don't really have a source, like a transmitting thing. Plagues are just there. You can get it, but the person next to you can't. But this one is very particular. Basically, on July 17th of 2002, all living mammals with a Y chromosome, including embryos and sperm, simultaneously die, with the exception of a young amateur escape artist named Yurik Brown. Hilarious, because he escaped the plague. Brian's so funny. And his capuchin monkey that he named Ampersand, only reason he's with is to train to become a helper monkey to prove to his girlfriend Beth, who's in Australia at the time, that he can commit and do something with his life, because he's kind of a, how do I say this politely, a shiftless layabout loser. So basically, these two survive, but they are the only two males alive around the world. And then because of this, and you got to remember, 2002 was a little different, and some people... Actually, I've never heard of anybody actually complaining that the book is sexist, because really it's a book shining on feminism and the power of women, but that's actually not the point of it. The point of it is what happens if all the men in the world were to die, and because of all the jobs they do, like fly planes and keep telecommunications open and power plants and stuff like that, which has always been more of a male-dominated, especially power plants and stuff like that, and the industrial stuff, that shit shuts down. And not all of it goes away. It just takes a drastic blow because most of the people who run that are men. You get the first issue is basically a bunch of cuts of men dying in different areas. Obviously, Yurik is not in danger of any of that because he's a survivor, obviously. But you see a couple different points of view from other people. You have Yurik's sister Hiro, who is an EMT, and the guy she's banging at the time, fellow EMT, dies on top of her. I think actually kind of technically might. No, it was after they got done. I don't think he was in her. They were done, I think. And he starts spilling blood out of every orifice, puking up blood, and ends up dying, and she, of course, freaks out. And then you meet a handful of the characters. You have, obviously, Yurik Brown. You have Agent 355, who becomes Yurik's bodyguard, who works for a group called the Culper Ring, who I won't even go into it because it's basically a U.S. government agency dating back to the American Revolution. It's pretty cool, pretty awesome. You have Dr. Allison Mann, who is a geneticist who is seeking to discover the reason for the plague and, of course, figure out why Yurik survived. You have Ampersand, Yurik's capuchin monkey, and the only other male mammal to survive the plague. You have Beth DeVille, who is Yurik's girlfriend, who is basically working in Australia as an anthropology, within the field of anthropology. And then you have Beth 2, who you meet later on. You have Hiro, who is Yurik's older sister, and she joins a group called the Daughters of the Amazon, which are fucking crazy and super awesome. You have Natalia Zamenth, who is a soldier who helps later on, helps Agent 355, Allison Mann, and Yurik. And then there's a couple other characters. There's a bunch more characters. I don't want to go through the whole list, but those are your main ones that are the biggest one. Oh, and Rose. Rose is in there too, who is Australian Navy and Allison Mann's lover. She's a spy. But yeah, that's pretty much it for that. So basically, this, I don't want to go into that nonsense. I guess we'll go into the history of it making its way to a TV program. So it started way back in 2007, before the book even ended. The rights for the series were acquired by New Line Cinema. It's oddly enough a sister company to Vertigo, because they're all under the Warner Brothers umbrella. And it was said that screener Carl Ellsworth and director G.J. Caruso were set to attach to the project, and then David S. Goyer was set as a producer. So G.J. Caruso, for the people who don't know who that is, he has done a lot of things. Unfortunately, a lot of terrible things. No, I can't say that. Not a bunch of terrible things. A bunch of things that just didn't pan out as well as he wanted to. He's done a lot of TV shows too. Well, not a lot. He's done a handful of TV shows as well. Some you may even recognize. But not a whole lot. He didn't run a whole stint on anything. The most he did is 6 episodes of The Shield. But a TV or movie wise, I would say, he did The Salt and Sea, which is a really good movie with Val Kilmer. Two for the Money, Disturbia, Eagle Eye. He worked with your boy Shia LaBeouf a few times. He did the ill-fated I Am Number 4, which a lot of people did not like. It's actually a really fun movie, but not spectacular by any stretch of the imagination. And I believe it's based on a book series? I might be wrong about that. Nope, here it is. Book series by the same name by Lauren Legacy. Sure, why not? So it was a pretty fun book. You have he did the sequel to XXX, Return of Xander Gage, which is the third one that came out last year. And then I do know I saw this a while back. He's set to direct the next G.I. Joe film, which I think is supposed to be like a sequel? I don't know, a reboot? I'm not too sure. Anyway, it doesn't matter. There's not all the details on that. But it's called Ever Vigilant. It was a terrible fucking name. But whatever. We're not going to go into that. We'll talk about G.I. Joe another time. So he was set to do that with David S. Goyer. We've talked about David S. Goyer on this podcast before. He is huge into comic book movies. From the Blade movies, he did, unfortunately, he did Ghost Rider movies. Those weren't all his fault, I know. He did The Dark Knight Rises. He did Batman Begins, The Dark Knight. He wrote Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, which then was rewritten, or he rewrote that, I can't remember which way it is. And then he's done some other really terrible movies he's produced and stuff. He did write Dark City, which is one of my favorites. He did the sequel to The Crow, which is City of Angels, which of the sequels is the best one by far, but nowhere close to the original. And then he's worked on a lot of TV shows. He did Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's right. That's the, not the new one. That's the one with David Hasselhoff. It's 20 years ago when that movie was made. But he's writer, producer, and creator of the show Krypton. He did Constantine, which unfortunately was canceled way too prematurely because the show was fucking amazing. He did a really cool show on Stars called Da Vinci's Demons, which is a really fun one. Unfortunately, he was also tied to the Blade TV series, which was awful. But that's all right. Not his fault. He's written video games. He did Call of Duty Black Ops, Black Ops 2, and Star Wars Secrets of the Empire, which I don't think has actually come out. That's a newer one. I don't remember if it came out or not. But and then he wrote a couple novels too that I've never written, but should probably check out. So that's David S. Goyer. From there, they were basically trying to make this whole thing into a movie, which is fucking terrible. But whatever. They had a written draft by Brian K. Vaughan himself, which stayed true to the original comic book, but was later rejected because of the cost involved and the fact that it was set to be three movies, I believe, in his original plan. But I could be wrong about that as well. And like a lot of people were thrown around for the movie. Because DJ Caruso worked with Shia LaBeouf, he was in the runnings for playing Yurik Brown, which has been a terrible choice, because I don't think he would have played the character well. At one point, Zachary Levi was thrown in. That's right. Shazam was thrown in as being in there because he was big on the show. Chuck was massive at the time. He was, I don't know if he ever was actually considering, he showed interest for it. It even says here that the graphic novel was in an episode of Chuck versus the Nacho Sampler. Then that started to fall apart, because DJ Caruso had other things going on because of how long it was going. Then it was, like I said, Caruso was doing other things, so he was staying on loosely attached to the project. New Line refused to develop everything as a standalone movie instead of a trilogy. And then DJ Caruso moved on to make I Am Number 4, which I don't know was the greatest choice in the world, but you got to do some work, you know? And he was very, again, because the studio wanted to do a single movie versus a trilogy, it pushed a lot of people out of it because it's really hard to tell this story in 2 hours, especially way back then. I say way back then, 2 years ago or 10 years ago. But really, I mean, the story is so in depth and it needed to be rated R, which wouldn't have sold very well. I still don't think this day and age it would sell you well, but as a TV show, you could do it, especially on something like FX, which I'll get to in a minute. So that fell apart. And then in 2012, the studio brought in a bunch of people from different things. One of the guys was the writer for a TV show called Jericho. That never worked out either. Let's see what else we had. They got a new screenplay written by some people. They were looking for potential directors. That fell apart. And then in early 2013, it was announced that Dan Trachtenberg, who at the time didn't really have anything big in his credit other than a super dope short film. Two short films. One, a super dope short film called Portal, The No Escape, which was essentially a fan film based on the video game Portal 2, and it was pretty awesome. And then that whole thing fell. We'll talk about Dan Trachtenberg another day because he's a pretty awesome dude. So that started to gain speed. Goyer stayed on as producer still because when producers latch onto a project, they usually go a long way with a project until it either gets made or just gets shelved ultimately. He's always been there. Started gaining speed. It looked like the film was being pushed in production starting in 2014. But then it came out in January of 2014. Brian K. Vaughan stated that it's under my understanding. This is a quote from him from a press release. It's my understanding that the rights to Why the Last Man will revert to the co-creators Pia Guerrera and me for the first time in a decade if the planned New Line adaptation doesn't start shooting in the next few months. For the people who don't know how adaptation licensing works when it comes to this stuff like this, is studios can option for buying the property, the rights to make this property into anything that's not already made. So they can't then reproduce it as comic books and sell it to their own. But they also, movie studios wouldn't do that. That's dumb. Except for Netflix. They'll do that shit. But then they have so long they can have it until they have to either buy it again or finally make something so they retain the rights to that property in that media or medium. Perfect example, the X-Men movies, the Fantastic Four movies, the Spider-Man movies, things like that. All of those are obviously properties of Marvel. Marvel back in the day decided they wanted to have movies made of their stuff because that's the next logical step, because they were already in obviously comic books. They were already in cartoons. They had done really well. Cartoons are very popular. So they wanted the point to make their own movies. So they partnered with a bunch of other people. Paramount was ultimately the ones that started the MCU as we know it now. But before that, you had Fox doing the X-Men. You had Sony doing Spider-Man, which is why Spider-Man's been rebooted so many times, because every time they falter with it, they either have to make something new or they have to relinquish their rights to it because they can't rebuy it, and they can't sell it. They can if the party who owns it outright doesn't want it back, but Marvel would never, not nowadays, would never let that slide. But it can't be bought by another company to be made something else. It's under a contract until that contract ends. If the it goes back to the people, and those people can sell it back to whoever they want to, even the same company if they wanted to, which, I mean, if they waited that long, there's no reason they would. But that's why you have so many Spider-Man movies, so many X-Men movies, unfortunately so many Fantastic Four movies that have different casts and are different stories, because they keep trying to reinvent it to elongate the contract they have for it, because no one will ever... They don't want to give up such a large property because it has such a big following from the rabid fan base from the comic books and stuff like that. So it's kind of a way they can keep money going, or keep a project going to try to generate money, and then maybe get a home run with said project. Sorry about that. So that's one of the reasons why. So when this happens, for the Wild Ass Man, on September 24th, Trachtenberg confirmed via his Twitter that it's not happening, but it's in trusted hands, the creators. In a subsequent interview, he was noted as noted that the fact the rights reverted back to Brian quite a few months ago, which basically means that Brian K. Vaughan and Pia Guerrera have the rights to the property back in their own hands. And they can either sell it as an adaptation somewhere else, or nowadays, especially with Brian being so rampant in the TV world, he could then try to get it made somewhere else, which he did. There was rumors of it being shopped around to different studios with the plan of him staying on as a producer, as well as him, I want to say, writing the show from the get-go, which is probably your best bet, because the dude has a really good record of TV shows. Plus, he created the material, so he should be able to be good at making it, especially since he wrote all the books and since he has scripts for everything. So, studios are dumb, because they're like, they could actually pay... To me, if they wanted to be smart about it, they would pay less money to the creator and make it a partnership. Do like a spec thing where basically we would start making it, we'll pay you to work on it, and then we'll, as a producer as well as a showrunner or writer, you get paid for those roles, and then you could build in the contract of how, as it gets so popular, you make money off of it too, and the studio makes money off of it. It's worked several times. It worked for Walking Dead. It worked for Robert Kirkman on a couple different things, one which hasn't even seen the light of day yet, but that's okay. But Walking Dead is a perfect example of that. They didn't buy it outright from him. There was a partnership with him. He was an executive producer. He wrote on a few episodes. And so it worked out for both of them, I would imagine, since Walking Dead's on its 9th season. That's pretty good. But so Why Last Man was this new setup with FX is developing as a TV show versus movies. Nina Jacobson and Brad Simpson, along with Brian K. Vaughan, who will also write the series, will be pushing it forward as a full-length, hour-long series on FX way back in 2015. 2016, it was reported that Michael Green was brought on as showrunner, and then shortly after that, nothing came about of it. 2 years passed, almost 2 years passed. In April of this year, it was announced that FX has handed out a formal pilot order and enlisted a couple other people to be added on along with as co-showrunners with Green and Melina on board with Melina Matsuoka's to direct, I think, the pilot episode only. We'll have to find out. And then in July 11th of this year, 2018, FX confirmed the addition or the signing on of four cast members to headline the show. You have Yurik Brown, who played by, I'm going to butcher these names, I'm pretty sure, on some of them. So Yurik Brown will be played by Barry Kogan, I think it is. You have Diane Lane, who will be playing Yurik's mother, Senator Jennifer Brown. You have a Megan Poots, who will play Yurik's sister, Hero. And you have Lashana Lynch, who will be playing Agent 355 so far. So those names, Diane Lane, you should probably know as being, well, a lot of things. We'll get there in a minute. Barry has a 7-year career in television and movies. Movie-wise, he hasn't done a whole lot of big things. He's done a couple short films. He's had a couple small parts. The biggest thing, look at his list here. You're not going to know him from any of this stuff, really. I mean, he was George Mills in Dunkirk. I don't know if that's any help to anybody. But that's Brian Kogan, I believe it is. K-E-O-G-H-A-N, Kogan. I'm terrible with names, doesn't matter. Diane Lane, obviously playing, like I said, Senator Jennifer Brown, who's Yurik's mother. She is most notably right now, as she plays Superman's mom, Martha Kent, in the DCEU. She appeared in Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, and Justice League. She has done several things. She's not uncommon to the world of comic books at all, being in the DC movies. She was in the Judge Dredd movie with Sylvester Stallone. She's worked on a bunch of different things, really. TV shows, movies, just a bunch of shit, really. You know, Dialing is. Emugen Poots, I think it's Emugen and Megan, I'm not too sure how to say it. Iomengen, I don't know. Anyway, she's fairly new. She's been around for about 12 years. 12 or 14 years, something like that. I don't know. She's British, I believe. She British? Where's her bio at? I'm on the right page. She's English. English actress. British, same thing. Whatever. You know, same place. Her first movie was V for Vendetta. Her biggest role was in 28 Weeks Later. She was in Fright Night. She was in she did a bunch of stuff, really. Nothing really. I mean, if you saw her, she'd probably know who she was if you don't know her. She was in I Kill Giants. So there she goes. Comic book movies. TV shows, she was in a few things, a few television movies. She's a main role in a TV show on, I want to say that's Stars? Is that Stars or is that Showtime? I'm not too sure where this comes from. Showtime, I was right. Roadies, which I have not watched, but I should because it's made by Cameron Crowe, and I love that dude. His movie, actually, Almost Famous, speaking of Cameron Crowe, is possibly going to be a musical soon on Broadway, so that's pretty fun. So Megan Poots will be playing Hero, which I think is a really good choice because the thing is, I've seen her in, she's really good, and she needs to be, I think she'd be really good as alongside everybody else and Wireless Man. And last up is Lashana Lynch. I had to look this up because I didn't know who she was. I still don't know who she is by looking at this stuff. But it does look like she's been in the she's fairly new in everything. She did a single episode of a show called The Bill back in 2007, and then didn't work for 4 years, and was on Fast Girls. She was in a movie called Powder Room, and then she's going to be in the new movie Captain Marvel. I do believe she plays Captain Marvel's wing lady. I could be completely wrong about that. I'm not actually sure if that's correct or not. Nope, I'm completely wrong about that. I don't know who she is in these movies. At all. Nope, I don't know who she is at all in these movies. I don't even see her listed. Do I see her listed? Nope. I don't know. Yeah, she is. She plays Maria. That's what I thought. She's the wing woman for you see her in the trailer for a little bit. She plays the wing woman, Phantom. Or Phanton. Phanton? Phanton? I don't know what her call sign is. I don't know very well. But she plays the Carol Danvers wing lady in Captain Marvel next year. Which, by the way, the trailer looks awesome if you guys haven't seen it yet. So, yeah, that's her. That's it. So that's all we really know so far about the movie itself. Or the TV show, I should say. The movies, we know that they're not happening. So check it out. Unfortunately, I can't recommend you read it on Comixology Unlimited, but you can buy it on Comixology. It's available on there if you like digital books, or if you don't have a comic shop near you, or you don't like physical media, because there are some people out there like that. You can buy it online in collections as well as individual issues, which is weird to do digitally because it's cheaper, so much cheaper to buy the collections, but do how you want. There are 60 of them. Tremendous story, amazing characters, and you will cry at the end. Spoiler alert. But yeah, that's about it for Why the Last... Actually, that is it for Why the Last Man. And I think that's it for this episode. Next month's theme will be horror movies, because it is October, the season of The Witch, as they say. Someone says. I'm not actually sure if anyone says that. That might be something I heard in a movie or read in a book. I'm not too sure. But anyhow, that's it for this week's episode. I do not know what movies I'm watching next, or going to be talking about next month and watching, but you'll find out next Wednesday when October starts officially for this year podcast. That's it for the awesome Cody. Again, I am Cody, and as usual, let's be awesome.